Gross, you know her quite well at this point in time. Elena's been with us many a time as far as being a rights activist like no other, and especially when it comes to discrimination and her incredible organization, which is called Erase Racism. She's the founder and the president, a regional civil rights organization based right here on the island, and exposing and addressing the devastating impact of historical and ongoing structural racism, particularly in housing and public school education. Lane, it is great to have you on this day as we commemorate this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. My dear, how are you?
I'm fine, Jay. Thank you for having me.
Great having you. You know, I was thinking about this yesterday in the fact that if Martin Luther King were alive today, I believe he'd be celebrating birthday number 92. And I'm just wondering, Elaine Gross, what he would have to say about this nation's contentious racial landscape. What do you think he'd be thinking right now?
Well, he definitely would be feeling a little deja vu, because he did point out very clearly to us the evil, if you will, of white supremacy. And he would be disheartened to have learned to witness what happened on the 6th at the Capitol. You know, because you like to think that there's that progress is always moving forward. And for him to see that the Confederate flag was being flown inside the Capitol, there was a noose outside on the plaza, that people were storming the Capitol to stop a democratically elected new administration from going forward, trying to stop the certification of the votes. It would be extremely disheartening to him, I'm sure, because he was definitely right in the midst of active white supremacy. During his time, and that's what he was fighting against. And so it is, to all of us, it is I'm lost for words at how disappointing, how outrageous. Not only the people who were outside and came inside, but the people who were already inside, and you know, the elected officials who were basically refusing to acknowledge our democratic process and trying to block it, trying to put in place or keep in place another government. the one that had lost.
You know, in looking back, you look at this country right now, a far different place. The one that Martin Luther King saw way back in the late 60s when his life was taken, and when it was at age 39, right? And you look at where we are right now. We look at this country, Elaine. I've seen an African-American president a couple of terms in that of Barack Obama. And I'm sure Martin Luther King probably thought no one would ever foresee what was to come as far as the commander-in-chief of being an African-American. What about that aspect, do you think?
I think he would have saw that coming, in part because one of his quotes, we must accept finite disappointment, but we must never lose infinite hope. And I think he did have infinite hope. And so that kept him going. And you know, when you think about it, he did see, he and his compatriots did see tremendous change in a relatively short period of time. There would have been people who would have been so confident that the Jim Crow segregation would never end, because it seemed to be a fixture that just was not going to end. And as we know, it was a very hard-fought fight with a lot of people losing their life over it. And so I think that in that context, you know, he knew a lot of people who said no, and a lot of people who had given up hope. And so, and yet, change did come. So I think he probably would have seen that coming as well. And that's why I think it would have been so disappointing to see us take several large steps back with the violence at the Capitol.
And when you think about everything, we're talking about Lane Gross, race, racism on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day, ladies and gentlemen. When you think of all that's transpired here regarding not only the President of the United States, in that being Barack Obama, but you look at top levels of government, the cabinet, the Supreme Court, Elaine, the Senate, the House, state governors. I mean, race no longer an obstacle as far as getting to an elective office. You know, even here in New York, I look at, you know, the Carl Hastings and the Andrew Stewart Cousins becoming the, you know, Stewart Cousins, the first black Senate, state Senate majority leader. A couple of years ago, I look at Hakeem Jeffries and the strides that he has made, a very strong candidate to be one day the Speaker of the House without question. These are great achievements. And I think, you know, it was Dr. King who paved the way. It was just a common sense approach that this country had to kind of take on here over the years. And, you know, there's no question that Dr. King, you know, was the instigator as far as things of this occurrence here.
Well, I would say that race is still an obstacle. However, we can point to, as you have done, many people who've been able to succeed despite the obstacle. And I think it only points up the what is so special and monumental about the achievements. Because when you think about obstacles, you have to think about the masses, so to speak, and are the average black people and the average white people, are they situated the same? And any honest assessment of that would say, no, they're not. And we've had conversations about, you know, what happens to black men and women with as a result of encounters with the police, for example. So we have to make a distinction between the tremendous accomplishments of amazing individuals who would not be there if it were not for all of the civil rights struggles and for Dr. King and others. You know, there would have been no opportunity. And so I think that a lot of people in those positions do recognize that they are there because of all of the sacrifices that have been made before them. And certainly our president, President Barack Obama, recognized that. And, you know, so it doesn't take anything away from them to say at the same time, yes, you have achieved, and yes, that is wonderful that this was able to happen, and to also say, but we know that we have a long way to go. And I think that, you know, that Martin Luther King recognized that very clearly. And he recognized it in the context of the world also. He recognized that, you know, he talked about injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. He really believed that, you know, that as long as there was poverty in the world, you know, I can never be rich. you know, as long as their diseases are rampant and millions of people in this world cannot expect to live more than 28 or 30 years, I can never be totally healthy, even if I just got a good checkup at the Mayo Clinic. you know, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. This is the way our world is made. No individual or nation can stand out boasting of being independent. We are interdependent. And he was so ahead of his time in terms of his insight. And, you know, every time I go to read something, it's afresh, it's new, and it's timely.
No question. Elaine Gross, Race Racism, putting this very special day, ladies and gentlemen, in perspective. And, you know, we talk about kind of a sensibility approach. And I can't help but think, I think he would have loved the passion of the movement of the Black Lives Matter. But I also think he would have plenty of opposition, Elaine, based on, you know, when he sees the demonstrations and the chaos and the violence, and it kind of undermines the cause of the passion of that movement. What do you think he would have thought regarding what transpired over the last several months, especially after the murder of George Floyd back on May the 25th?
Well, I think he would have seen the Black Lives Movement certainly as a continuation of civil rights struggle and a continuation specifically of what Dr. King started to say later in his life, which, as you said, was a very short life, which was... He was making a distinction between some of the gains earlier on, you know, saying to restaurants, okay, you must allow blacks, you know, you must serve blacks and they must be treated equally when they come into a restaurant. That, it didn't cost America anything. Of course, it irked the hell out of a lot of people who were then forced to do something that they didn't want to do if they, you know, it was an affront to their sensibilities of their white superiority to be told that you have to treat these people like they are the human beings that they are. But he saw that there were going to be things that were going to be more difficult. And I think that one of the things that the Black Lives Matter is really pointing up is challenging the fact that the police, and they were called other things earlier on, but those who were charged with safety, they were never concerned about the safety of black people. They were charged with protecting white people within the framework of white supremacy, and they were often the ones who were participating in allowing the lynchings and things of that nature. And so there, one of the things that we haven't come to grips with is that, wait a minute, we need to make sure that we root out all of the kind of leftover, structural racism in our very, police infrastructure. Because the ones that are engaging in the killings, they do not expect to be held accountable. And there's a long history of a lack of accountability. And so the Black Lives Matter movement is really pointing it up, telling a truth that the country hasn't been willing to face. And it's an ugly truth, and it's a and it goes at the heart of white supremacy. And I think when you talk about the cumulatively speaking, the it must be millions at this point, giving all of the very peaceful marches that have gone on, and it is, and that's not to say that there aren't those who have capitalized on opportunities to do damage, to loot, et cetera. But when you have a small handful of people doing that, and you have tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of people marching peacefully, there's no comparison. And of course, we know the difference in the way just last summer, the peaceful demonstrators in D.C., there was no violence. There was no looting. There was no nothing. They were peacefully, and the government ordered, that they be forcibly removed with tear gas and rubber bullets and nothing like that happened last week, of course, during the insurrection at the Capitol. They were, looking at the news footage, you would think they were welcomed into the Capitol, armed rebels. So I think that we shouldn't confuse peaceful protests, even if there are some individuals, and again, they've been very limited individuals, who have capitalized on an opportunity to loot or to do damage. We can't confuse that with the very intentional insurrection of armed individuals that were bent on taking over the Capitol.
And, one final thought, when you look back, you look at legacies and everything else. Dr. King always managed to take it head on. I'm talking about the injustice that he saw in this country. And he always appealed to a higher power. And I'm talking about Americans in general and what hopefully they could aspire to and pass on to their children. But that never dies. That's why I think, the third Monday of January, we celebrate and we look back and we can only hope. And I think that's what kind of powers this day when you think way back of 1968 and at the very too soon early age of 39 with what happened to Martin Luther King. But when you look back, when you look ahead, I think that's why I think we will never forget and always think about what we should become as a nation, you know? That's kind of a final thought I have. What's yours?
Yeah, I think that in the face of tremendous violence, he was all about nonviolence. And he did appeal. He consistently appealed to our better nature in trying to get America and the world to live up to a true nonviolent society that was reflecting justice. And I think that we need to, you know, that never goes old. That's what all of us need to keep our eyes on at this point. We need to be all about justice, and we also need to be nonviolent. And that is what will carry us forward.
Without question. Always great to have you, getting your perspective. We can't thank you enough, Elaine Gross, Erase Racism. Until next time, thanks, Elaine, so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Jay. Thank you.